So it's pretty cool. One of our, so it's hard to say family member, but like distantly related family member. So okay. Like Kristen's cousin's wife's brother, right? So like okay. not super far, but like far enough. He has no idea who we are, but we know him. But
we're talking multiple layers of in-laws being involved. Yeah, that's fine.
And plus, if you saw him, so like it's very Asian, right? Like you'd be like, you're not related at all. But like, so like it's funny. But anyway, he's on Jeopardy right now. So he's Yeah, it's cool. They're doing like a, he was on before and did really well. So they invited him for a tournament back and he's about to win the tournament. Like he's mathematically, as long as he doesn't do something like stupid, mathematically he won the tournament. So it's fun to see him on somebody that, you know, we know we're like watching him because his sister, right, is somebody that we know and we like her a lot. And so we're like, this is fun, man. Like, I've never cared about Jeopardy at all. It's like the playoffs, right? Like, you don't ever care about the playoffs until your team is in there. And you're like, hey, Jeopardy's kind of fun.
Right, yeah. Or like, you know, there were a couple of years where one of our cousins, her husband, had like some siblings who were in the rotation for like the gymnastics team for like the Olympics and stuff. And it's one of those things like, have I met the guy? No. But tangentially, I am related. And so I am completely and totally all in on this.
Yeah. Having that
in my mind, this is incredibly personal.
Yep. Exactly. I might as well be on the team. Like, I don't know why.
Nope.
Oh, come on. You can't imagine being in one of those gymnastic unitards.
I don't know whether I can or not, but I choose not to. And I'm going to recommend for everyone else listening. Yeah, don't do that.
Can and should. Very different questions, right?
If you are planning on getting a good night's sleep over the course of the next couple of weeks, do not imagine that.
Don't picture
because no one needs that popping up when they close their eyes, getting ready to lay down and go to sleep.
Oh, crap. That's funny. All right.
Me just going across the floor, twirling a ribbon.
All right. Intro. And let's jump into it. Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation. All right, man, you had anything good lately?
No, not really, honestly.
Yeah, that's
like,
fair.
I was getting ready to stretch and talk about some like macro brew stuff that I've had, but it's like, no.
Sometimes you just don't, you know?
Yeah, it was all right, but it was not worth talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, we started our cut at the beginning of January, so, you know, we're not drinking a whole lot of anything interesting right now. But I did, we went down to, so ASU tennis started back up. Tournament started, or the doubleheader started at like 10 a.m., and it was cold this weekend, right? And so I was like,
yes, it
I
was.
Went out there and I was like, you know what would be really good? Like just sitting on these cold bleachers with a nice cup of coffee. And so I Googled it and it was like, hey, there's a coffee shop 157 feet away. I was like, that's fan-freaking-tastic, even though I should be able to see it and I can't see it. So I trusted Google because it's Google, right? So I hit the directions and I started walking. And then, you know, I've already emotionally committed to this cup of coffee.
Right.
And then I realized that on the directions, it said that it's like 3/4 of a mile and like a 15-minute walk one way. And I was like, well, hang on. And my GPS got screwed up and was like pinpointing me like 3/4 of a mile farther away than where I actually was. And I was like, dang it. But I want this coffee so bad.
I was
going
to say, did you make the walk?
Oh, I absolutely did.
Attaboy.
But it was this neat little shop. So it was all farm to cup. So their family is in Colombia. I believe it was Colombia. And so they buy all of their coffee from their family's farm and roast it in there. And it was a neat little shop. They were very overwhelmed, but pleasant. The coffee was pretty good. You know, like I'm not going to sit here and be like, this is the best coffee I've ever had. But it was good. Like it was solid, you know.
Okay.
probably a little underdeveloped, but overall pretty good. And I would go back there again. And, you know, it was a nice walk. It was pleasant. So I don't have any complaints, but it was, there's definitely a lot of room in everywhere for decent coffee shops. Like,
yeah,
not major, massive, fit 500 people in it, like small, local community coffee shop that can fit 15, 20 people in it and just like has the regulars and is nice. You know, like, yeah, I was just thinking you could have, there's room for one of those on every corner, you know, type of a thing, my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That would be great. Like, so, yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So that's about the most interesting thing I've had and am doing, really. But I did come across something else that I thought was kind of interesting. So in my downtime, I've been, so I told you that I got rid of all my social media. I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but I did tell you. And so there's still like, what do I do in my downtime now that I can't just numb my brain and go into La La Land? So
yeah,
trying to figure out how to fill that space has been hard. But I found a couple of good YouTube channels, and one of them is called After School. And it's interesting because what he does is he like summarizes books. Or could even be speeches or anything that's like interested, like a topic, he'll kind of read it and distill it into like the main principles. So it's like Cliff Notes.
Yeah.
Right. But what he does is he draws on a whiteboard. And so he kind of draws out the topic that he's talking about. So like as he's summarizing, it's like drawing like
super. You're getting visual representation as well as the actual words.
Yeah. Yeah. So nice. It helps kind of connect the dots a little bit. So you're not just listening. So having the listening and the visual really helps. And I listened to this one from Maslow. I'm assuming it's the same Maslow who did the hierarchy of needs.
I would assume so. That's the only Maslow I know of who like gets talked about. Intellectually,
yeah.
So I'm gonna roll with that.
Yeah, I could have double checked it, but you know, scholarly work here. This is what I do. But it was interesting because it was like the two types of fears, and I was like, okay, I'll get into this. And it was really interesting because it talked about the first fear being the fear of greatness, and I was like, that I know that, right? I've heard that. Everybody says, oh, the fear of greatness stops so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I've never really understood that. You know, it's like, who's really afraid of being great? Like, who's really afraid of winning? Like that doesn't make sense to me. It's a real thing. I get it, but it doesn't make sense. And so they explained it where it was those that are bettering themselves or seek greatness or are making themselves great. What they do is they kind of rise to the top or they separate themselves, right? Like I've heard a lot of coaches call it, hey, this is separation season, right? Where you separate from the pack.
Right.
And we say that as like a winning thing, you know, like if you're in a race, you want to separate from the pack because you want to win.
Yeah.
But when you're a herd animal, right, separating from the pack means you get eaten first.
Also true.
And so it also means that like, and the pack can resent, like, the pack is isolating you and will kick you out, kind of a thing. So like there's this weird fear of separation and greatness is separation. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
I mean, if you think about it, it really does make sense. When you think about like one of the words that we use to describe someone who goes way above and beyond what you would normally expect of a person is we call them exceptional. And we mean that. We mean that as a positive. Mm-hmm. And it is. It is a positive. But there's also something to that idea of this person is an exception.
An exception to the rule. Yeah.
Right. And normally when we say that, we mean it in a very specific context. Mm-hmm. Like in this one realm, they are the exception. However, I can definitely get how having that be your identity, you know, they all that talk about, you know, oh, it's lonely at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
So wait. My reward if I do really, really well at this stuff, if I achieve all the things I want to achieve, my reward is going to be that I'm alone in mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Isn't the world awesome?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so...
So wait, I can be mediocre and have friends, or I can succeed and be lonely.
That is the twisted way that we approach it most of the time. I think that's the truth, actually. I think, like, we're joking, but I think that's actually what most of our brains do. It's not right, but I think it's what we do.
I'm laughing so I don't cry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm laughing so I don't cry. Like, yeah, that's... Yep.
And so then the opposite side of the... So the second fear was a fear of inadequacy, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. The word was inadequacy. So what it was kind of like... Oh boy, struggling on my, let me check my notes here again really quick.
Go for it. Yeah.
Insignificance, not. So basically, yeah. So like not having a meaningful life. So insignificance, like that. And that one made sense to me too, because that's like a driving force for me is like, I want my life to matter. Right. I want to mean something. And so then what that does is it drives you to be better, right? You want to make yourself meaningful and matter and have an impact. So then you get better yourself, which then starts the cycle of becoming great, which separates you from the pack. And so it's kind of like this cycle, a circle diagram. And they actually drew a circle diagram. And so the conclusion, Maslow's conclusion, was to be great, but don't think you are great. Right. Like do, but don't think about yourself in that way type of a thing. But be great. Do the great things, but don't think about it. And yeah. Go ahead.
So, oh, no. OK. Saying, yeah. No. And that tracks that like that kind of.
Yeah, it was reasonable.
On some level, that makes sense.
Yeah, it was reasonable. And they defined that as confidence. Right. Confident right. people do great things, but they don't talk about how great they are. But this long-winded story and this connection is what it is it's connecting my reading to Romans, and I'm reading about Paul, and there was a point in which I just had to pray, like, God, will you just tell me what you want me to know, because I don't get it, right? Like, there's too much. I'm arguing with Paul constantly. Right. I'm arguing with ideas that me and AJ talked about. I'm arguing with my own ideas that, like, there's too much stuff here. Just tell me what you want me to hear. Like, I quit. Like, this is too much. But there was a really interesting correlation, because I'm reading in Romans 8 and Paul is talking about kind of like the glory of being adopted and being children of God. And I was thinking about it. I was like, man, Paul really leans into the greatness thing, like about the glory of being a follower of Christ. Like, it is a big deal. It's like treasure for him, right? And he doesn't hide that at all, ever. Like, he talks about, he balances it where he's like, hey, you're going to suffer. Like, he never pulls the punch, but he's always like, hey, suffering is one thing, but the glory, he's like bring it on. Like, I'll take all the glory from Christ. Like, I'll take
the suffering will be as nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so I thought it was really interesting on how, Paul is really leaning into the glory aspect, where I know, and I actually, it was in the Maslow talk too, that he said most people will like kind of feign humility, like do a fake humility, because they that fear of greatness of being separate, they'll actually like bring themselves down so that they remain in the pack. And right. So then you kind of are self-deprecating, and so you're damaging yourself out of fear of your greatness. And I was like, Paul doesn't do that. Like, Paul doesn't have that problem. But he uses that, and he's constantly leveraging that for ministry. And I thought that mm-hmm. was kind of the interesting point, is he's always pushing hard. He's pushing hard, really, for us to go from milk to meat, right? To be better. Like, he's like, no, like, drive so close that, like, your light then brings other people up. So he's not like, he doesn't have this like fear of insignificance at all. Like, he's like, be as great as you can, because then that's Christ's glory, and that will shine more light onto more people. And I was like,
and I think that is where the difference comes in between what like Paul is talking about and what Maslow is talking about. Because part of the reason why Paul, I don't think, has that fear of insignificance is because it's not about him or about us being significant. Like, it is that idea of, no, we are allowed to tap into the one who is the exception. Like, as the one who made the rule. And by the rule, I mean like all capital letters, anything that is a rule actually comes from him. And so because of that, we're not bearing the weight of that. Like, because there actually isn't any room for isolation, because what we are striving to is higher levels of relationship. Like, if you succeed in the glory, that glory is a relationship. You can't possibly be isolated. And this, to me, is kind of one of those things that I think happens a lot when we look at kind of the purely humanist psychological view on things. There is a ton of accuracy and truth in it. Mm-hmm. And it is wonderful, and it is useful, and it is helpful at identifying problems and at identifying steps that can be taken, but not ultimate solutions.
Yeah.
And so, like, Maslow, I think, is absolutely right to identify, you know, there are billions of fears, billions of things that we're scared of. But that in terms of the fears that actually, like, govern our lives, you know, not like I'm afraid of heights.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't totally govern my life, because most of the time I'm walking on the ground, so not a big deal.
Right.
But in terms of those, like, big overarching fears, they probably do actually pretty accurately fall into one of those two categories. But for Maslow, he has to keep them as two separate categories.
Mm-hmm.
He needs this dichotomous view, this ability to look at, like, well, so everyone is afraid, but they're either afraid of this or they're afraid of this. That way I can differentiate things. I can come up with steps. I can do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the world can kind of make sense to me. But the problem is that I don't actually think part of the reason it becomes cyclical in that view is, I think, because they're actually the same fear. Like, I love the name, that fear of insignificance. Because that fear of insignificance, which drives us to seek glory, is because I feel like I am not enough. I am insignificant. I am insufficient. And so I must be more.
I'm just a number in the crowd. Yeah.
Right. Like, I am alone in this sea of humanity, because everyone around me has meaning, has purpose, has goodness, but I don't. And so I strive to be better. And then I think that fear of greatness, that fear of the glory, kind of comes in sort of, to me, there are kind of two driving forces behind it. There is the one being talked about this idea of being isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also the fear of expectation. You know, that idea of, like, well, but what if I did it once? Like, what if that's it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that achievement I made to be recognized as great in this field, what if that was it? Like, the sum of all of my talents, all of my abilities, all of my passions, they culminated in this one moment. You know, I had a buddy in high school who talked all the time about, he thought, the best music that had ever been made was all the work of one-hit wonders. Because he was like, think about it. All of the musical talent, all of the passion, a lifetime of dedicating yourself to your craft to produce one song, like the entire lifetime of an entire band combined into that. That's kind of a cool thing, but it's also like, yeah. But then imagine being part of that band and going to the studio to record the next one. And everyone's like,
nah, you're over. Man,
this ain't it. Like,
yeah.
Can you give us another one like that last one?
Yeah.
Man, I wish I could.
Can't do it.
You know, like, it's a goofy analogy, but, you know, the Patriots just fired Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I don't know anything about Bill Belichick as a person, largely by his own design. So I'm not going to like pretend I know how he was feeling about that and whether he was stressed over the idea of having to succeed again or if he was just that like single-minded in his focus. But I can tell you for me, I look at that and like the guy who they've already hired to take over, one of his former assistant coaches and former players, I'm like, oh, I'll tell you right now what would be happening in my head. Wait. The guy who like won more Super Bowls as a head coach than any other wasn't good enough for the job and you're bringing me in. What am I supposed to do next year? Like what can I actually do to be a success at this point?
Yeah.
And so like that fear of expectation of like, how am I going to live up to my past successes? I think that becomes part of it as well, which again is still insignificance and is still solved by the fact that, well, but it's not about me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not about my greatness. It's not about my glory or my significance. And that's where, you know, we've talked in the past about Paul comes across oftentimes as I'm reading, like, what Paul writes. Like, man, you're a biblical author. And so, like, I'm not actually on a level to pick nits with you. But man, do you read arrogant. I read you. I read your writing and I'm like, dude.
I wouldn't be able to say some of this stuff out loud.
You acknowledged that you sin. Cool. And then you spent the rest of the time talking about all of these other people, like bragging in your letter about calling Peter out. Like, come on, man. Yeah. Come on.
So I just had a thought too as you were working through your last thought. And so, and it correlated back to your joke too, is that, so think about it this way. So we have a fear of insignificance, meaning that we're like a nameless, faceless part of the herd, right? We're part of the crowd. We don't matter. So then we seek to make ourselves great and we separate ourselves from the herd. And so that's the fear of greatness, being separated from the herd. But then you realize that your significance and your meaning comes from the herd, comes from the group, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why that idea that, oh, it's lonely at the top. Well, if it's lonely at the top, you freaking did it wrong, right? Like, that's not how it's supposed to be, you know? Like, if you are doing it the way Paul's doing it, like Paul's saying, hey, give me all the glory, but he's also bringing everybody that he possibly can up with him. And so he's not alone because, one, like you said, he's got the relationship with Christ constantly. But also, like, he's bringing people up with him as much as possible. And so, like, I feel like if you have a fear of insignificance and you want to be greater, like, the idea should not be to separate out on your own, but to make yourself better and bring everybody up with you. Like, if you get better, then you should see your family get better and your community get better. Like, it should all, like sometimes there is a point that kind of pulls the whole up.
And,
you know?
No, I think that's really, really insightful because I think part of what it does is like that idea of it's lonely at the top. It's strange that it's never occurred to anyone to question if whether the problem is what they're considering the top. Like, because again, that idea of it's lonely at the top, man, if on a human level, none of us are getting to the top. We're climbing higher. But the whole purpose of that, like you said, to me, it's really getting to the top is supposed to be much more of like a pathfinder role or a scout. Like, you're going forward to find the way. You were able to get this step before other people were. That way you can show them where this step is. And like, yeah, Paul, as much as like all, and it is very, very tongue in cheek when I talk about Paul being arrogant. You know, I would just want to make that very clear. Like, yeah, Peter's my homeboy. Like, Peter's willingness to make a complete fool out of himself resonates with me very, very deeply. And I don't resonate as much with Paul on that personal level.
All I can think back is to like the Twilight days when there was like Team Jacob and Team Edward.
Oh, good Lord.
Like the two.
I'm I'm so glad I'm far too ignorant about that topic to be able to like go with you.
Oh, dang it.
Nah.
All right.
No. I'm 100% aware of like,
do you want a vampire boyfriend or a werewolf boyfriend?
Yeah, no. Like, I wish I were as ignorant as I like to claim I am about it. But, like, no, absolutely.
Team Peter, got it.
But it is. I am.
Yep, I know. Absolutely.
He, on that personal human level, I connect with him. But at the same time, as much as I'll joke about some of the strength in the words of Paul when he's talking about this glory and when he's talking about his role, it's also worth noting Paul is the one who like introduces formally this concept of the church as the body of Christ, and that all are united, and that no part of the body actually is more important or valuable than the others. That like there is this interdependence, even if some parts of the body do get more earthly glory, that's not a statement of their necessity and it's not a statement of their importance. And so like, yeah, I think that concept of the desire for improvement isn't ultimately for my own sake. And it kind of removes the question of significance. You know, it, because it's no longer about like, no, I know what my significance is. My significance is to strive alongside all of these other people who are striving. And if I happen to be the one who breaks through here, I show it to them. And if I'm not the one who happens to break through here, I'm counting on them to show it to me. You know? And so like, there's no longer, I am a big fan of competition. I love sports, so I must love competition. Like that's what it is. But not everything is competitive. You know, not everything actually requires a winner and a loser, you know, and salvation and quite frankly, life are not competitive sports. Like at least not in the sense that we're competing with others. Yes, we are at battle with principalities and powers and all of that kind of stuff. But I'm not actually in competition with them. Weirdly, and again, you know, I was making fun of Paul for being arrogant, and here I go. But like, weirdly, I'm not actually the one competing with Satan. I am the prize being competed over. Like,
dang, I was going to say that, but then you spun it around on me. Yeah. Not, I wasn't like, going to say, I was going to say that we're competing against, you know, like we're fighting Satan, but we're not.
And,
you're right.
We kind of are.
Like,
we kind of are, but like yeah, as a proxy war.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
oh man, that was good.
We are like Satan is vying with God and knows he will lose. So just desires as many people to be stuck losing with him. But ultimately his competition is God. And literally thank God for that. Because if I was actually in a battle against Satan, no, that's not going to go my way.
Yeah.
If it's me versus him. But if, on the other hand, it is Christ versus him, and I am a like conscious, willful prize that is able to like, it's almost like we're the battlefield, except for we're able to shift the battlefield. We're able to tilt it one way or the other. Like I don't know, man. This analogy is getting so complicated.
No, I got you. No, I got you. The prize thing, I think, was the right thing. I think that was And that's why we strive with perseverance, not necessarily compete. And that's why we're always, Paul's always talking about like beating the flesh down, right? Like we're always on our own self. Like we're just there to not screw it up because Christ and him, like Christ is winning. Like we're there to persevere and run the race, you know?
That striving with perseverance, that striving with endurance, I think makes so much sense to me from that perspective of like, ultimately, what we have to do is continue to trust that regardless of how it feels about which side, quote unquote, is winning at this point, we know who the victor is ultimately going to be. And all we have to do is not give up.
Just hold on.
Until it, yeah. If we continue to allow the battle to progress, it will progress in our favor. It's only when we like give up and like turn off the game. Like imagine being a fan of whichever teams are in the Super Bowl. It's not going to be ours. But like being a fan of whichever teams in the Super Bowl, or like thinking back to that one where the Patriots, and I hate to use this example, came back from down by 28 points at the half. Imagine being a Patriot fan who like left that game because they just couldn't take the pain of it.
Yep.
And so their lasting memory of the game is the defeat.
Yep.
And all they had to do actually was stick it out.
Yep.
To not have that be the case.
Yeah, pretty good example. Yeah, no, it's interesting. And, you know, like pulling all this stuff together into a life lesson, I haven't read it yet, but my teachers have talked to me about it, and I'm thinking about trying to find it on like a free ebook or something. But like Plato's, I think it's in, is it the Cave or the Republic, where he talks about how like you are to use your skill set to better the community.
That's going to be in the Republic.
That's the Republic.
He's I think about the Cave is in the Republic as well, but like
different.
Yeah.
Metals.
That's part of his whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause like Plato's Republic, he uses this whole analogy of how society ought to be structured.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that's just an analogy to talk about how we should govern ourselves.
Right.
But yeah.
So I think I've read like through the first page or two, if I have it right, but like I haven't made it deep, so I want to, but like the principle that my teachers taught me out of that on the using your skills to better the community. And if you don't use your skills to better the community, it's like robbing them kind of goes hand in hand with this, where it's like, we should reflect and seek to be as good as we can. Like Paul, not shy away from the greatness that comes with Christ, and realizing that, yes, there will be some separation because there are going to be people who don't like the light. And Jesus told us that, right? And like as the light shines, the people who like the dark, they're going to leave, right? But when you're pursuing Christ, that is all relationship. And so it shouldn't be lonely. If we're seeking greatness, it shouldn't be lonely. And so what I guess my life lesson is really around, like, we should seek to be the best that we can be in Christ and then share that. Right. So like one of my goals are like the last, I've been working on the stewardship thing for like a year and a half now, and I'm still building on it, is just learn something new and share it. Right. So like cooking is my thing, right? Like that's how I bless people. That's kind of like my personal ministry. I like to bring people into my home. I make them food. I give it to them. And that is a work of Christ for me. That's how it's important to me. And so like pasta and pizza dough is my thing this year. Like I am going to learn how to make some friggin' noodles. I'm going to bring some people in and I'm going to make noodles for them. Like it's a silly thing, but like that's me. Right. And so like it's doing me the best I can and then sharing it with someone and let Christ take it from there.
Absolutely, man. I think that's awesome. And I think for me, we've been talking a lot about St. Paul and his letters and stuff, like looking at Romans. And I'm instead going to go ahead and just steal from John's letter now completely at random and just talk about that idea that perfect love drives out fear. Mm. Like, whether we're talking about the fear of insignificance or whether we're talking about the fear of glory, whatever it is, this fear is a reflection of our imperfect love. And that's not a judgment. That's a fact. Like that's true of all of us because we are all afraid. But even though my love is not perfect, my beloved is. And so like, for me, that's the key moving forward, is the reason I worry about my significance or the reason I worry about my glory is because I'm thinking about me. If I keep my eyes actually on Christ, and if I view everything that I am doing as an attempt to move closer to him, then the rest of it will take care of itself. I don't need to be significant because he is. I don't need to worry about being overwhelmed by the burden of glory because it's his glory, not mine. That, like, you know, false humility is horrific. And it's something that I have 100% leaned into as one of my chief conflict resolution strategies. Like, just talk crap about myself until other people have to compliment me, because then they're not going to pick on me anymore. Mm. They feel bad.
Yep.
Like, that false humility is incredibly damaging. But like an actual real humility, which is like, no, like I am good at things because God has made me good at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I appreciate the praise. I'll blush a little bit, but ultimately I'm going to say, yeah, but God gets the actual credit and the glory here. I am a slob like the rest of you. We are all in that together.
Mm-hmm.
Like this hot mess that is humanity. And so, like, we're not alone. And the only way to ultimately end up alone is, again, failing in that persistence and failing in that perseverance where we give up the fight and so aren't able to participate in the victory.
Yep. Yep. Or you choose isolation, which, again, is the mm-hmm. opposite of love. You know, like,
yep.
you can't, there's no love without someone else, my opinion.
Yeah.
So that's good, man. I like it. And I think it all goes into like the importance of learning, listening to different concepts, different things, but then also refiltering it through your biblical perspective, you know, and really yeah. grasping it. Cause you know, you could listen to that and be like, oh yeah, no, I'll just be confident and be like, yeah, but we're not, confidence doesn't do much in our race. Right. Like,
right.
Like there's a different driving factor. Confidence is important to build as part of your development. But ultimately, like, you have to remember, like, if somebody told you to build giant muscles, but you're a marathon runner, like, that doesn't work, right? So, like, our race exactly. is very specific. And so, like, you got to take this stuff, digest it, and then apply it properly. And so
I think it was Aristotle who said, like, the sign of a keen intellect is a person who can consider an idea without accepting it.
Mm.
Yes. And I think that's the key, like, that ability to right. listen to those like topics and then be like, okay, cool. There's definitely something here.
Yep.
Now, who are the people who I go to discuss this? Not to have them tell me what it means, but for us to discuss it and come to a conclusion about what it means and yeah. how it fits and how it applies.
Yep. Love it. Love it. Right on, man. You got anything else on your brain?
Not a thing.
Right on, right on. With that, everybody, we will say
adieu.